time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, December 2nd, 2019. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday and are back into the swing of things just a short amount of time before the Christmas holidays are upon us and then we get into the slump of the industry. There's a lot going on in the marketplace, and I'm really excited about today's hot topic. Of course, I should say before we get into that, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we are grateful to have you as our listener, our commitment to you. Each week, we want to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. So excited about this week's hot topic. I jumped ahead of our standard opening there to say we've got Barrett Burns, who is President and CEO of Vantage Score Solutions. We're going to be talking about the tremendous growth of the Vantage Score and what this means potentially for the mortgage industry. And I'll explain when we get into the Hot Topic segment why this really caught my attention, why I reached out to Barrett and asked him to come back on. But I want to just say thank you for being a part of our podcast, telling others about it. We're also part of the Industry Syndicate. Check out all the other podcasts that are out there and available at industrysyndicate.com. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors. Let's start off by the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Grateful for our partnership with them. Check out the Mortgage Action Alliance. Get your voice heard. Get the app on your phone, your smartphone. Send out your word to DC and onto the Hill, and make it so easy. So check out Mortgage Action Alliance. Pleased to be a part of the MBA. Also, Black Knight has developed an actionable intelligence platform to deliver data that drives growth. Talking about growth, you're going to have to talk about growth later in the Hot Topic segment. They do so in a way that allows you to reduce costs. Check out blackknightinc.com. Also, Open Mortgage. Scott Gordon, the team, one of the largest buyers of reverse mortgages, and home of some of the top LOs, as well as Finastra. The Fusion Mortgage Box solution automatically addresses compliance issues as well as enhancing borrower satisfaction, increased productivity. Just went through a demo with one of my clients who's selecting a new LOS, and they were just very impressed with that product. Lots of new enhancements already, and there's more on the way shortly here in the first quarter. I think it's even before that. So make sure if you're looking to make a change in the LOS, check out Finastra's product. Got some new things going on. Very, very impressive. But the POS and LOS combined just make for a nice integration, all-in-one solution. Makes for vendor management a little bit easier. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both of these co-ops create competitive advantages for both the lender members and the vendor members. And we are a vendor member and pleased with that. Also, the CMLA, which is the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Thrilled to have them here with us as a sponsor, as well as Velma, Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, AI Assist. All of these vendors make it possible for us to be here each week and supply all this information for you. I want to say a special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHFA published the 2020 maximum conforming loan limits for mortgages eligible to be acquired by the GSEs. Average home prices continued to rise last year. Therefore, the baseline maximum conforming loan limit for one-unit properties increased 5.4% from $484,350 to $510,400. In most high-cost areas, the maximum conforming loan limit for one-unit properties will increase from $726,525 to $765,600. The changes scheduled for 2020 mark the fourth consecutive annual increase in maximum conforming loan limits. Also, be sure to register for the upcoming IMB conference February 3rd through the 6th in New Orleans. This is an opportunity to get the latest insights and updates on industry trends impacting IMBs. You can register at mba.org. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining us.
Good job, Rob. Appreciate you getting us all this good and timely information. I want to underscore the IMB conference. I was just invited to be a speaker there, moderator there. Very excited. We're going to be moderating a session, and I'll talk to you more about it. Don't want to get ahead of the organizers yet, but I agreed to be there and moderate a session and speak at the event. So very excited about that. Les Parker's here with us with this week's TM Spotlight and the macro view of the market.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Amesworth Advisors. Bad trading war. After an overwhelming win by the democracy movement at the ballot box in Hong Kong, the market yawned. The market sees a step one trade deal happening because both sides hurt, and China hurts enough to make a deal. Hong Kong is in a standoff. The U.S. is growing more than the rest of the advanced economies. So, a neutralized market puts trading on the sideline. The bulls won't run away, and the bears struggle to get far. Who's to blame for the malaise? Who's bad to the bone? These feeds are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Just want to go listen to that for a few minutes. I love that music. Oh, cracks me up. Les, great job. Gary Canterbone, love the team and how you guys team up together. Anyway, Joe Farr's here with us. And he's not bad to the bone. I like that. I like that music. Anyway, Joe, what you got for us in the markets? I hope you had a great Thanksgiving here, Fred.
Yeah, we did. Had a great one. Thank you. I hope you did, too. Yeah, we're down a little bit today. We're down about 10 basis points. And it's a little bit surprising because the economic data that came out this morning fell short of expectations. Both construction spending and the ISM, or Institute of Supply Management Manufacturing Index, came out. Both fell short of what was expected. And with that kind of economic data coming out, you would expect that with the stock market down right now, it's down about 230 points on the Dow. You would expect a little improvement in MBS prices, but instead we're down a little bit. And then on top of that, we had some trade concerns rise just recently here. Trump has tweeted about reinstating some tariffs on Brazil and Argentina, steel and aluminum tariffs. And, of course, the signing of that legislation late last week, essentially in support of the Hong Kong protesters, didn't sit well with the Chinese. And so, you know, there are some issues going on in the trade concerns, and I agree with what Les said, that most people need it, but it's sure going to be a tough road to get to. So looking at last week, Dave, MBS prices did improve a little bit last week. Gains on Monday and Tuesday were somewhat offset on Wednesday. The economic data last week was mixed. We saw contracts signed to buy new homes were better than expected, while the contracts signed to buy previously owned homes were lower than expected, and unfortunately, new home component is a much smaller part of the overall market, so it'd be better if we saw those reversed, actually. Then November measured consumer confidence came in below expectations, although it is still very high. The big surprise, Dave, was durable orders. In October, it rose 0.6 when a pretty big decline was expected. The second estimate of third quarter GDP rose 0.2 from the first estimate was an estimate of 1.9% for the third quarter growth, and it rose to 2.1%. So that's a pretty big change in that number. And then, you know, MBS prices fell. I mentioned gave back some gains on Monday and Tuesday, fell on Wednesday after that better than expected durable orders and GDP numbers. Probably the most important report that came out last week was the PCE core inflation index.
And
it fortunately was not a surprise. It did rise. Well, it fell slightly from September, 1.7% on an annual basis to 1.6% in October. Now, looking at this week, you know, trade obviously is going to remain a big concern as these new tariffs seem to be coming online and some concerns within the China trade agreements, trade talks. So that'll continue to drive the market. But we do have the Institute of Supply Management Services Index to come out at 8:30 Eastern Time on Wednesday, and that can move the market. And then, of course, the first Friday of the month has the November jobs report. So that'll be released at 8:30 Eastern Time. 180,000 net new jobs are expected, and that's up from 128,000 in October. That was negatively affected by the strike in the manufacturing several manufacturing areas. I think it had a negative effect on jobs, about 36,000. So that it turned itself around this month. And then, you know, the other components of the jobs report, including average hourly earnings and the unemployment rate, are expected to show no change.
No change. All right. Well, what's the historical, if there's not any tweeting going on or external circumstances, do we usually see an upswing of rates? I'm trying to, as you were talking, I was thinking, or do we kind of just stay flat through December?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, oftentimes it results in greater volatility. And so, you know, I don't know that I have a general trend for December, but it is a time when you need to be concerned about midday movements larger than expected or day-to-day movements larger than expected in MBS prices.
Very good point. So you do a good job. Appreciate you bringing this to us each and every week, Joe. Very grateful for your contribution. Good to have you here. Scott Gordon of Open Mortgage talking about the science of sales.
Scott Gordon here with a bit of sales science. Today I want to examine the third and final essential element your story must have, an honest struggle. Your hero must struggle to overcome the relevant challenge that you have laid before them and is essential for good storytelling. Think of real-life supermen that you've encountered. Not the comic characters, but braggarts who you encounter in the real world. Have you ever heard this? Yeah, I started managing the office 2 years ago. Sales were down, originators were slacking on the job, and corporate couldn't decide how to process a loan. But as soon as I took over, I showed them how it was done. Now we close more loans during the holidays than other branches do in summer. First, this guy is annoying. But second, where's the struggle? What obstacles did he really have to overcome? He simply walked through the door and supermanned his office to success. It's just not a good story because it's missing the struggle, one of the three key elements. So with a relatable hero, a relevant challenge, and an honest struggle, you can construct a simple story that leads to a worthy lesson over and over, turning you into a true story seller. Next time, we'll look at how to structure these elements in the most effective way to maximize your stories and your service. This might sound too good to be true, but it's not. It's the science of sales.
Well, that is a great story. Thanksgiving, yeah, I'm struggling now to lose weight between now and before my daughter's wedding year, January 4th. So anyway, you want to talk about a struggle. Write the checks I'm writing for right now for a wedding, upcoming wedding. Whew, these things are expensive. Anyway, great segment, Scott. We all can identify with that. Tell a struggle. Don't be bragging. It's fine to tell you what you're doing well, but tell the struggle. Anyway, Alice Alvey is here with us, CMB, Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage. And she's always bringing us the legislative update, which also has a little bit of struggle to it. When you're looking at all the changes coming on, what you got for us, Alice? I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving with you and Andy. Drove through some ice, I understand, so that's a struggle.
Oh, yeah, we did have a great time with our daughter and her future in-laws and fiance and kids. It was just a really great time out in beautiful Corning, New York. So just love that Finger Lakes area.
Hey.
Hope you all get a chance to visit there someday. So anyway, we have a few things to give you all an update. A little bit's gone on over the last week. The Mortgage Bankers Association did send in a letter on behalf of many of its lenders. So, you know, by many estimates, it's hundreds of lenders. I think one estimate VA said was about 400 lenders had received letters about loans that VA interest rate reduction refinance loans that weren't going to receive guarantee because VA felt they violated the law. When, you know, there were many lenders in the group that we heard during different seminars had received verbals from VA that were conflicting with some of the guidance that VA was enforcing. So MBA did send a letter on November 22nd on behalf of the association. So for those of you who wonder, what does the association do for me? It's these types of things that you need to, and we have a collective voice through a central source that gets their attention so that they will take a look at some of the fines and penalties they've been assessing when lenders thought that they were following what was being told by the regional offices. So more to follow on that. We will watch to see if VA does anything, but at least MBA is looking out for us. The second thing I wanted to make sure you were at least aware of, you know, we've talked about over the last many years whether the different battles that have gone on about the CFPB being constitutional and folks really believing that it's not constitutional to give one individual so much power that can only be removed for cause by the president, and that's a tough case to fight. So we do have, I think we've reported that the Supreme Court agreed to hear the case. Now there's an actual date. So the Supreme Court did schedule for March 3rd to hear a challenge to the constitutionality of the statutory restrictions on the president's ability to remove the director of the CFPB from the office. Now, this has wide implications because we need the Supreme Court to, first of all, comment on that aspect. And then if they do say that, you know, yes, he could be removed, if the president does have these powers, then how does that affect the rest of the Dodd-Frank Act, right? Because if it affects this one aspect of Title 10, that was a giant piece of legislation. For those of you who remember trying to read the 1,800 pages and the thousands of supplemental pages that went with it, a lot's been implemented between Wall Street and the lending industry on this. So it's supposed to be really a two-part comment that comes out, and we'll just wait and see. Now, the arguments will be held on March 3rd, and then it will take several months. So it'll be sometime over the summer that we actually hear a ruling. So stay tuned for that. And then Rob Van Rad, of course, did report on the new loan amount increase. So that's a fun thing to make sure that you're all watching for, getting to close those higher loan amounts today. And then last but not least, there is one item that is open for comment. The CFPB is looking for comments on the TRID rule assessment plan. So they are required to comment on, did they implement TRID in the best interest of the consumers? There's multiple questions that we as lenders will be answering. So you do want, as a company, to take a look at that, comment on it. The Mortgage Bankers Association will be commenting, but very often I find theirs come in kind of late, and you really want to, and I don't mean that in any slam, but it's just, you know, it takes time to put these things together, and it really is that as a lender, you need to have your own thoughts and get out there as well, and not just count on waiting to hear back and just going ditto with the MBA's, you know, comments. I'm sure they'll have well thought out comments, but the more unique comments, the more I think value that it has in trying to get something done for us. So you do want to take a look at it. The comment period's open until January 20th. So that's it, Dave, and back to you.
There you go. Good job, Alice. Appreciate it. There's so much you could cover, and I just appreciate you doing what you do and the amount of time you do it. Appreciate it so much. By the way, you want to go listen to all of Alice's comments, go to the website, lickitonlending.com. You can listen to all of those as well as you can for each one of the segments we do. If you want to, there's so much she packs into her segment. Always call people's attention to it, as well as everyone else's segment. So let's get into Alan Pollack, who is here with this week's Weekly Tech Update. Did you have a good Thanksgiving there in the hood, in the neighborhood?
Yeah, I did. The hood was great. Had a great, great Thanksgiving. I actually have a gentleman in our neighborhood who puts up like, I don't know, about 13 or so turkey fryers, and he's got all the injection tools and everything, and you sort of show up with your turkey, some oil, and he fries it, and everybody hangs out. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, fun. That's a great way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, David, with everybody traveling between Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and all the deals and so forth, a really interesting topic came up yesterday that I thought I'd mention real quick. It's called juice jacking. And it's really about when you're at airports and public places and you plug your device into those public ports in order to get a quick charge. Well, airport employees and others wouldn't have any way to know, but there are people, hackers out there, scammers that are connecting devices that would pretend to act like the device that's supporting that charge and malware on your computer or download everything from your computer. So if you don't use a password protection tool like 1Login or LastPass, there's a bunch of them out there, and you keep things on your computer in a notepad or just any information, your Apple Pay information or credit card information, just be careful as during this holiday season you plug into any of those ports. Is called juice jacking, and if you Google it, you'll see a lot of great stuff about it.
Juice
so moving on,
jacking.
David.
Amazing.
Yeah, juice jacking.
All right.
So moving along, we've got some interesting stuff, and really, you know, because everybody's pushing, it's the end of the year, we've got final projects we hope to have ready before the beginning of the year. This today really is about just how to get aligned if things are running off the track or you're preparing for a start of your project next month. I title it Expectations and Testing with an Implementing Technology. And I myself, you know, when you talk about the struggle, right, I myself am within many projects. Some do have struggles. They're not all perfect. And, you know, we've all been part of these, or a part of these, right? Disasters happen, or we go off schedule on these projects. And of course, we end with, you know, what was less than expected. It's harder to gain adoption because we can't deliver what we thought we would. There's just, it affects changes downstream. And sometimes there's things that we or the vendor doesn't even know about. And so really, it's so important to be aligned, and it's important to stay aligned. And so I put a couple things together. We've talked about these in prior segments, and it's such a good time to bring it back up. The first one, David, you know, let's meet with our internal teams. We got to map out the path to expectations and have everyone's buy-in. So in other words, if you expect a certain amount of features to be in your new point of sale or something automated with AI that you're implementing, lay out what those initial items are. What's phase 1, 2, and 3? And don't overburden what you think you could have in that initial phase 1, because it's going to require more testing and acceptance than you actually think it will. The second item, David, is use a map, whether it's a visual diagram, whether it's a process map, and share it, because more than likely you have multiple parties and vendors included, especially your LOS vendor, and use that map as a guide to know where things have to interact and where data has to flow. And then third, David, you have to define success metrics. It is so, so important that everybody testing is on the same page and completely understands what we're testing for, rather than finding things at the last minute that don't work. It's very hard for your vendors to roll back a release. And from the vendor side, it's very hard to have missed expectations, because the day after the release, it can't be used or it can't be adopted as thought. So define those success metrics, have meetings, keep stakeholders informed, share the word, the message, the mission of your stakeholders with your team, with your vendors, and it's just communication overall. And, you know, the very last thing, David, if you remember, we've talked about the Moscow method. I won't really go into it today, but just use it in your planning. As you do all those things I mentioned, use the Moscow method, you know, which is just a way to prioritize. You can Google it, M-O-S-C-O-W, and you can wait and prioritize your stuff. In the end, you will have a well-defined success, and you will be driven to that success.
Good job. Yeah, that is so true. Moscow method. In fact, we'll put that in some show notes here that we'll be pumping out. A lot of people want to know, how can we find out more information? Go over to our LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn. We pump out a lot of these show notes through LinkedIn each and every week, sometimes 5 times a day, about getting information out, because there's so much good information. Alan, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Likewise.
Good to have you back. And can't wait to talk to you a little bit later this week. Got some interesting things to discuss with you. Folks, so Finastra, we love to get them right after Alan's segment, get them up here. They've got a great mobile app. It's incredible. And we just had a client sign up, and we did a demonstration with them 2 hours this last week. They were blown away with how efficient, effective, and smooth it is. And they've got another development coming up here in January we'll be talking about. So very pleased. Check out Mortgage Bots mobile app, which is all part of the main program. Check it out at finastra.com. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, and official PhD.
Hi, Dave.
Is with us today. How is your Thanksgiving, friend? Your grandson?
It was great. It was awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the home of grandson, so, you know, there's nothing better than that. So I'm a happy camper.
Oh, Ben is just such a cutie, too. What a cute little guy.
So today, that we've got the CEO of VantageScore coming on, Barrett joining soon, I wanted to talk about measurement and change and how to think about both of those two items. So, you know, anytime you have something new, so this is a new credit score, you know, different algorithm than FICO, and he's going to talk about all of that. But when we talk about measurement, there's lots of things in our business we can measure. So I'm going to talk just a second about measurement and then jump into the whole idea about implementing the new method. So around measurement, measuring a credit score, do you pay your bills on time? I mean, all of the elements that go into that, but what other things are there that we can measure and think about? Well, there's communication. There's a communication IQ, and part of that is associated with an emotional IQ. We talk about that quite a bit. There's also a couple of new ones. There's an authenticity IQ, which is really important in effective communication, and then there's also a listening IQ, which also is important in both emotional IQ and to create the authenticity, because if people don't feel like they're being listened to, then it's not going to be an authentic relationship. So all these things come together and things that can be measured in a business. So that was the segue, but I did want to talk now more about how to think about what you're thinking about when you're thinking about measurement or changing or systems. So Alan hinted about this when he was talking about structure in a conversion. The thing that I've noticed when people look at putting in new systems, a new scoring system or whatever else it could be, the biggest issue and the biggest mistake is systems are under-examined and conversions are underestimated. Alan talked about the conversions are underestimated part of that. I would suggest that starts even before that, where systems are under-examined. And watching somebody do something on a system does not mean that it's easy to do what they just did. In fact, it's probably substantially more difficult than just watching somebody do it. So one of the first things we want to think about is how to know what you know and how to think about what we think about. So what we think about when we pick a system is more than just a list. It's about the theory behind even creating the list. How do we know what we need to know? And so this is sort of a fuzzy topic, but it gets into what we refer to in the academic circles as a double movement of reflective thought or reflectivity, which simply means induction and deduction in a repetitive fashion so that we go from specific to general. Like, for example, one tech fails, so therefore we assume all tech fails. So that's specific to general, and deduction would be general to specific. You know, saw a crime, found a clue, found the criminal. So, but the process is doing that in a cycle over and over and over. And we can think about the bicameral mind. Your brain's broken into hemispheres, and the dominance of the hemisphere depends on the person that's uniquely crafted. But like thinking is typically more of a, well, it can be a right brain function. Typing is typically more of a left brain function because it includes motor skill delivery. So what we got to do, though, when we look at systems is we want to use the right brain to explore and understand. So that there we're going from details to a cause. And then we're going to use our left brain to reach a plan, which is from cause to solution. So going from understanding to a cause and a cause to a solution. And this is really what I call the relentless pursuit of why and then how. You have to understand before you can solve. So many times people jump into solving before they understand, and that's a big mistake, and that's part of the reason why these systems fail, because they didn't get what they thought they were going to get. So we need to think about how we think about it. And I think that's my 5 minutes. It's 4 minutes and 30 seconds, and we had an intro, so this is stressful to keep under the line. I don't like this clock thing ticking away. I don't see what the point of it is or why it matters. But anyway, so there you go, Dave. There's my presentation.
That's really good. I mean, there's some great content in there. And if you want to get Andy's expanded version, you can get on the phone with him. You can email him. Email him at andy@mbs-team.com. Fountain of knowledge, information. Trust me, we get together for barbecue and we hardly get through just updating each other and all that's going on and hearing about his newest PhD endeavor. It's always so much fun. But an hour and a half could go like in a blink. So anyway, a lot of information. Encourage you to reach out to Andy Schell, andy@mbs-team.com. Appreciate it, Andy, very much. For those of you that are here on a weekly basis listening live, this ends our Hot Topic segment. But for those of you listening live, just stay right on because we're going to go into the next segment, which is our Hot Topic segment. So thank you for being a part of the podcast, and let's get right into the Hot Topic segment. We have a lot going on in the area of developments in the mortgage industry. Changes are coming, and we've invited back Barrett Burns, President and CEO of VantageScore Solutions. Barrett was on and a guest of ours on May 6th, and we just really started getting into talking about VantageScore. We got to know Barrett a little bit, found out that he's a 25-year veteran. Well, he's a longer veteran than that than the mortgage industry, but he's been with the big brands for 25 years, places like Citi and Ford. But he was having lunch with a scoring consultant back in March of 2006, and the guy mentioned about how the three bureaus back then were starting a new scoring company, and Barrett went back to the office, and the phone rang. interestingly, and someone says, hey, do you know anything about, this VantageScore? He says, how interesting. I just had lunch with a guy, told me about it. And so the short of the story is he interviewed for the job. They said he's perfect for the company, and they hired him. So VantageScore has been led by Barrett Burns for all this time, and I'm really excited to get into it. And here's the reason why it's so important. I've been getting all these phone calls from these consultant. Well, I'm part of GLG. It's called Gerson Learman Consultant and Group, as well as other scores, and they're all calling and saying, Dave, are you aware of some of the latest statistics on how VantageScore is growing up? And I go, I see Barrett at the conferences, but I was unaware of how the statistics are picking up. So when I heard that, I said, we got to get Barrett back on. So I want you to go listen to the May 6th podcast. In there, we talked a little bit about how consumer credit is changing and the need for the bureaus to adjust, so they formed this new entity. And one of the things that's most interesting, well, let's just get into it with Barrett right away, and I've got a few things I want to cover with you, Barrett, right out of the gate. But Barrett, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for the invitation. And when are we going to have barbecue? That sounds great.
That is good. Oh, I'd love to share it. And Andy and I have found a real, really good barbecue spot right here close to where we both live. Yeah, when you were on this last time, back in May, we talked about how the three credit bureaus put three people from each company in a room. You said in that podcast, they were told, don't come out until you have a new model that is more consistent across all the bureaus, that positively scores more consumers, that's underscoring it, and more accurately scores them. And in that, I pressed into, what do you mean by more accurate? You says it doesn't let consumers overborrow, it doesn't let lenders overlend. So I really got interested in that, and we started talking about the two primary groups that are going to be impacted this, and it was millennials and Latinos, because VantageScore looks back over 24 months, whereas FICO looks back over 6 months. The common denominator that's between millennials and Latinos is they don't use credit all the time. So the longer look back that VantageScore does gives them an advantage, and it could open up credit for as many as, if I have the notes right, 40 to 45 million more consumers can be into it, of which 10 million are going to be coming into the housing market here soon. So a lot of information. Go back to that podcast. Did I get any of my notes wrong from listening on my flight back last night from being gone? Is that pretty accurate, or you want to amend that?
No, just add Latinos to the group that borrows infrequently and often cannot get a conventional score. So Latinos, African Americans, and millennials.
Okay, good. So you would. What's really interesting is that as the younger generation comes into there, it is one of the common denominators for whether the millennial, Latino, or Black, it sounds like, is they're becoming more infrequent, or they are infrequent users of credit. And yeah, that's one of the advantages. So let's really start there. And then I want to get into why has there been such an interest in VantageScore. So talk a little bit more about the demographics and expand on that if you could, Barrett.
Well, I should say that in 2013, we rebuilt the model because new data was becoming available and new mathematical techniques were proving to be highly accurate. So we rebuilt the model in 2013, and that's when our adoption really took off to this past year's 12.3 billion scores, with a pretty heavy concentration in credit card, because in the last model, VantageScore 4.0, we included trended data, which gives a snapshot of when somebody's starting to either improve their credit score or their credit behaviors, resulting in a better score, or they're going the other way. And so a lender can see a trend versus a snapshot point in time. So that, and then we use machine learning on the thin file consumers, which gave us about 18,000 additional attributes to score. So the predictiveness increased, and which, machine learning has been around for a long time, but didn't have the computing, firepower to really make it work until recently. So those are two additions, trended data and machine learning, that we added to the 4.0 that really gave us a ton of lift, both in terms of predictive characteristics and scoring more people. So that's attractive to high-volume lenders, either marketplace lenders or credit card lenders. They can detect a trend very quickly on, should they offer somebody more credit or not. And so the demographics are really playing into that. The housing sector, I'm sure you've seen all the statistics about how the average borrower is going to change to people of color rather dramatically over the next 10 years. And so the lending systems just need to, you know, be more reflective without adding risk to the system, but be more reflective of who the average borrower is rapidly becoming.
One of the things that's most interesting about the statistics that I heard from these investment bankers that were calling me and asking me for my thoughts about this, how I saw this affecting, was the fact that the thin files and how it is going to change or it is changing things, that the fact that these groups of millennials are infrequent users, or like my oldest daughter who just doesn't use credit much. And she is struggling a little bit. I mean, she got a great credit score, but because she doesn't have much and of the right makeup, she's feeling a little bit on the outside looking in. Whereas our youngest daughter studied it, and she got in on it early and is getting lots of things that hopefully won't get her in trouble. But anyway, talk a little bit about that. And then, by the way, I want to put Alice, Joe, Andy, and Alan on notice. We're going to get around to them right after this. But it's really fascinating to me, Barrett, how the 10 million new consumers, but we have the problem with agencies. So talk about thin file and then what's the status with the agencies, and then we'll get over to Alice.
Yeah, so the 10 million, about 2.4 of those 10 million, we scored 10 million more people to 620 and above, and 2.4 million of those are African Americans and Latinos, again, because they borrow differently. We also did a major study on, so how do thin file consumers perform? And lo and behold, on a large database, we found that consumers with thin files perform almost identically to consumers that have thick files. And, you know, years ago when we were in the consumer lending businesses, we said, well, anybody that doesn't have three credit trades, you know, must not be good credit. That's just the way it was back then. And that kind of just prevailed. I mean, I remember that as being, you know, around consumer lending for so many years. Yeah, three trades sounds right. Let's go with that. And then a number of lenders like Freddie do have a restriction on less than three credit trades. Well, we're proving that that's not the case anymore, that people with less than three trades can be highly predictive and therefore have more access to mainstream credit.
Well, now that is changing a little bit with Freddie, is it not? Hasn't there been some movement there of the three, of the two primary GSEs?
There may be. I haven't heard of it lately, but yeah, it may be, and I hope it would, because they're probably finding the same thing that you can rely on, along with the other underwriting criteria, not relying on the score alone.
So, Alice, as you listen to this and help guide where Union Home is going, what are your thoughts?
I've been following this all along, Barrett. So, this is great to see that this is now something that the industry will have access to. But that's really probably our next big hurdle, right, is how do we get that the agencies actually do adopt it? Don't they have to go through a study process? And I'd love your insight into when you think we'll actually be able to have this score be more mainstream.
So you're referring to the rule that conforms with the law, and we're very happy about that. So model developers will be able to apply next year by April. And the agencies or the FHFA and the agencies are putting together their application process now. They're supposed to finish that by the end of December. And the way Mark Calabria is working, you know, he's very structured, very process-oriented. That's what they said they were going to do, and that's what I'm sure they're going to do, is have that application process ready by the end of December. Then the way the rule goes is applications have to be put in by April. And then there's a 12 to 24-month business assessment and model assessment period. And we're fine with that. The reason we are is, after all, it's the biggest asset class in the world, and they need to get it right. So we're fine with that long assessment process. Got to get it done right. So, and FICO has to reapply, too, or apply. So it puts all of us on an equal footing. So that will be the rollout of it now. We are doing pilots with lenders to get them kind of first adopters and get them ready. So there's nothing precluding a pilot.
Thank you,
Joe.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people got hurt during the Great Recession. So over the last 10 years or so, and you know, you mentioned so many people going have a thin file. Can somebody that's been in trouble with a prior mortgage or been through a foreclosure even, recover using thin file credit?
Yes. So we also did a study on that. The question being, particularly from credit counselors, how fast can somebody get back up to a prime credit score, assuming no bankruptcy, but even with a foreclosure? And it can take anywhere a minimum of 9 months to a year and a half to get back to a prime score, even with thin files, because the value of that data slowly expires over time. Now, while that foreclosure may still be on the credit report for up to 7 years, the predictiveness of that data expires slowly over that time period because we want to score the most recent behaviors. So, assuming even if somebody gets modifications, which then improves the credit score because now they're current. And we say to credit counselors, teach people how to improve their score because they can get back to a prime score, assuming they've got the job back or employed and so forth. And don't let them lose hope. So, yes, yeah. They can get back within 9 months to a year and a half.
Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor, you touched on some of the difficulties of implementing this or change generally.
Well, hey, Barrett, thanks for joining. Well, I'm going to ask a question, and hopefully it's down the fairway. So Joe and I both in particular have been in the realm of capital markets for a long time and back into the 80s. And one of the things that you measure is performance of portfolio, and that leads to mortgage-backed security behavior. And the PSA, Public Securities Association, measures prepayment speeds, and part of the prepayment speed is driven by default characteristics. And so we've got decades and decades and decades of portfolio performance metrics driven from mostly FICO, at least in the last 15 years. So how will the new Vantage score affect mortgage-backed security performance when we don't have the decades of performance data to demonstrate the reliability of the default performance? Is that an okay question?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And so FICO will be applying probably with either FICO 08 or 09, because as you may know, the models that they use for mortgage acceptance are models that were built on data before the recession. So some of that data that was used in model development of what we call FICO 04, or some people call it classic FICO, is 20 years old. And FICO has been on stage with us saying they would prefer that those models be replaced. So the securities industry is going to face the same thing with either FICO or us. But we can, prepayment modeling organizations are beginning to get data from us that can go back 10 years for validations. And, it's something that the market's going to face, whichever, either with the newer FICO models or with us. But that's a very fair question on prepayment modeling. So the analysis needs to be done, and we're working with some of them to do that.
Part of the notion behind greater inclusion would probably lead to a higher default, you would think, simply because ratios are ratios. But it sounds like that's not necessarily the case. It's inclusion without increased delinquency or default, and that's right, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, it goes to accuracy of the model. So last year, Oliver Wyman just finished their annual report on us, and so last year, 2,500 users use us, and 2,200 financial institutions, including 9 of the largest banks use us, and 29 of the largest credit unions use us. So they wouldn't convert to a model that would give them, more defaults or higher rate of default, I guess I should say. They just wouldn't do it. It wouldn't make sense to broaden their reach and yet blow up their P&Ls. So I would say rationale for saying with an accurate model, you could score more people without reducing standards.
Perfect. Well, where were you when we had the push on CRA? You could have really helped make some decisions.
And I think I'm glad you raised that. So I think we can help solve the CRA issue by scoring more people, again, more accurately.
Exactly.
You know, no lender is going to embed a model that is less accurate.
At least they wouldn't do it on purpose. Awesome. Thanks, Barrett. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great information. Alan, what questions do you have for our guest?
Yes, sir. So great to have you on the podcast, Barrett. What probably is ringing with a lot of people is, sounds good, I know I can use it, or my partners use it in, you know, predictive or credit risk profile modeling, but how do I start leveraging it or use it, or how would I integrate with it? So maybe you could update our audience on the timeline of more adoption into VantageScore, and how does it best integrate, or what's needed to integrate it, you know, more broadly across our industry.
Well, our business model is that we license the models to the bureaus, and they sell them. They compete with each other to sell into the marketplace. So it starts with the bureau. We don't sell anything. We just develop models and promote the brand. And so it takes a while to get known in the marketplace and be tested. So I started the company in 2006, and really not until 2013 did it take off. And as I noted, last year we had 12.3 billion scores used, but none in the mortgage space because of the exclusion from Fannie and Freddie and FHFA until recently. So I think it takes time. It's a long sales cycle. We understand that. It requires a lot of testing, and it should. So I think it's, a step-by-step kind of thing. And a lot of lenders, on the lending side, want to see if somebody else is going to go first, and then see how it works. And that's exactly what's been happening. On the investor side, I think it just takes time. The rating agencies, we know them all well. They all have told us that there's no enhancement or no penalty for using VantageScore in a securitization. They know us well. They've tested us. So that's step one into the securities side. And I think investors, it'll take time for investors to become familiar with it. A lot of large ones do use us for buy, sell, or hold decisions in their loan level data analysis. But that means you got to have a pretty big staff and some PhDs and know how to use the data. But my guess is that'll trickle down to the smaller investors. I think we put a paper out a couple years ago on the fallacy of using credit scores for analysis in MBS or any security, really. And you might think that's odd that a credit score developer would take that point of view, but we use two hypothetical cases, portfolios, you're having the same average score, and one had double the default rate of the other one because of the tails. So our message to the investor community is, boy, don't use an average credit score for your analysis, and don't use score at origination either, because risk with a score changes over time. But it really should be loan level data, which is available now, to analyze the underlying collateral and borrower underneath the security. All that takes time.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, briefly touch on the Oliver Wyman study, if you could get into that, and then I want to go one last place real quickly. But
yeah, so we, for the first few years, everybody or people would ask us, well, yeah, but how much adoptions, who uses you and how much adoption? And since FICO had sued us for, just shut us down early, just after we started the company for antitrust, we don't get involved in the sales side because it could be either collusion or the appearance of collusion between the three companies. So we engage Oliver Wyman to survey the three bureaus on how many scores you use and by how many organizations. So, as I mentioned, 12.3 billion, that was this last year, and that's up 20% from the year before that. The four-year average growth rate's been 20%. So we're happy about that. Interesting, the day after our press release came out, National Mortgage News picked up some data that shocked us. the CEO of FICO, the FICO had been adamant about never releasing their scoring numbers. But at their July earnings call, a very enterprising equity analyst backed the CEO into the number. And he revealed that their last year's numbers were $14.5 billion. So we've been adding about $2 billion a year since 13. If that rate continues, you know, we may be catching them in a year and a half. But he also said that their peak usage was $13.5 billion in 2007. That means they've only added $1 billion since 2007, and that shocked us.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And we noticed in the last, since then, in their boilerplate in their press releases, they claimed a 90% market share. They've dropped that phrase in their press releases. I don't know if it's still on the website or not, but because we don't track of that carefully. But so we're catching up to them faster than we thought, only because this equity analyst got it out of them.
That's amazing. That's what really prompted all the phone calls from the investment bankers that were calling subject matter experts like myself, was to say, hey, we're noticing that, and their data includes the mortgage score, and your data does not. So if we were to add the mortgage score back into VantageScore, in fact, if VantageScore could be doing mortgage business, I mean, it's kind of like a no contest type thing. You guys have really done a heck of a job of taking out a potential competitor. I don't know if taking out's the right word, but where's the tipping point? When will this actually shift? Collabra is open. There's more discussion, more attention on it. And this data, latest data, certainly has got the investment bankers' attention.
Yeah, and a lot of independent mortgage bankers have really understand what we do. Union Home, for example, we know each other really well. They get what we do. And, you know, for a mortgage banker, they can see where they could you know, have more potential applicants, again, without lowering pricing or credit standards.
Yeah, when you can add 10 million new homeowners to the ranks of homeownership here in America, that's good all the way around. And whatever piece of it you can get lenders, you would do well. So VantageScore, where can they learn more? How can we get access to the reports? You've been very good to share those with me. I love that stuff. I'm writing on it more and more in publications, but how can others get a hold of this stuff, this information?
Well, the Oliver Wyman reports on our website, it goes into a lot of detail, and I think the National Mortgage News should be on there as well.
Good.
We put all that stuff on the website.
But you also publish a lot of reports and general information about what's going on for those that are interested in studying credit trends. You have some of that information available as well.
Yeah, all of us in our company, all former lenders. So we've sat in these seats before, you know, on the buy side of scoring, and we've been in front of regulators, and we've been, you know, in front of risk committees as careers. And it's on purpose that all of us, even our, you know, our PhDs all come from companies like, you know, GE Capital or the former GE Capital, and, you know, Fifth Third and other companies.
Yeah.
We want the lender experience inside our company to understand what they need from a risk management standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint, and a marketing standpoint. So that's why we publish a lot of that research.
Very good. Folks, thank you. I mean, Barrett, thank you so much. Very excited about the progress you're making. I think it's really interesting where you're at. Folks, we've had as our guest Barrett Burns, President and CEO of VantageScore Solutions. Check out the website. And it is VantageScoreSolutions.com. Is that correct?
Correct, yep.
Very good. Barrett, thanks so much for being here with us. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Really appreciate it.
Folks, next week we've got Tony Moss joining Ted Tozier, the past president of Jannie Mae, joining us. The two executives are going to be talking about where they see the housing market, what they see going on. They've got the Mayor Catalyst event that will be coming up in Dallas February 10th and through the 12th next year. And the theme of the 2020 conference is Entropy, Surviving in the New Abnormal. Seems like Tony and Ted have talked a lot about this in the past. They're predicting that almost 40% of the current lenders will not survive in the next 5 years. Tune in next week to learn how you can be one of the survivors. Listen to these two industry veterans. Appreciate them coming on. So don't miss next week. I want to say again a special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, the MBA, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, the CMLA, as well as Velma, Knowledge Coop, Vidyard Assist, and more vendors coming on. Want to become a sponsor? Check them out on our website. Check out the information. We got all of it up there. Or get a hold of Paul, whose contact information is on our website as well. Have a great week, everyone, and tell others about this podcast. That's how we've grown to such a large listening audience. And we thank you for it. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.